Place the back of my hand against my forehead like I can read her fortune. Wait, don't tell me. It's a list of favorite cupcake bakeries that you want me to take you to. Laughing, she shakes her head.
I did that last week. I showed you that one.
And I took you to Sunshine Bakery.
And the strawberry shortcake cupcake was so good.
It was delish, I furrow my brow. So then, is this a list of names for the dog you want to adopt someday?
You saw that too, and you agreed that Pedro was a good name.
Pedro is an awesome name for a someday dog. She takes a deep breath.
This is a new list.
I hold up a hand to stave her off one more time. I've got it. It's a list of everything that's as creepy awesome as a ventriloquist doll. She shakes her head once more, giggling, then pats the notebook proudly.
This is all the things Mom wanted me to do this summer.
It's a punch in the gut, the mention of Anna. It's been a few years, but now and then Lucy says something about her mom that knocks me to my knees. This summer specifically? I ask, swallowing roughly, trying to figure out how to tackle whatever this is. Have I missed some preteen milestone?
No.
She shakes her head as if I'm the child.
Any summer, when I was ready. And, well, now I'm ready.
Okay. And how did you come up with the list? Lucy smiles brightly. Too brightly.
I worked on it with her.
My heart squeezes. When did you work on it? Lists are Lucy's thing, and a recent one. Lists weren't Anna's thing at all. Lucy looks at the stars on her ceiling, swallowing.
A while ago.
I take a beat. Take a breath, too. Before? You worked on it with her before?
Yes.
Her voice wobbles a bit.
Well, we talked about it. I only wrote it down just now. I was finally ready to.
My throat tightens. Not for Anna, but for this girl who's had to make sense of the insensible. Do you want to show it to me? She nods, her pitch rising with excitement.
I do. Do you want to see it?
Heck yeah, I say, with more gusto than I feel. Besides, I do want to know what's on her list, because I want to know what's on my daughter's mind. Slowly, she flips through the pages, and as she does, I brace myself, hoping this list will be of the cupcake shop variety, rather than the latest bullet I don't know how to deflect. Too many surprise barrages I don't have the armor to withstand. Periods and mama bears and memories that sneak up on me. Lucy finds the page and shows me. I read her pristine handwriting. Things I want to do this summer. Swim with turtles. Go to London. Eat a sundae with all the flavors and extra toppings. Share something that's hard to share. Snorkel. Stay up past midnight. Turns out I've braced myself for something that didn't hurt at all. It's not the first time. Not only is it painless, it makes me smile. I can see Lucy doing all these things, having a blast, moving on, letting go. I hand it back to her. That sounds like an excellent summer. A smile spreads across her face.
You like my list?
Love it.
Can we do it?
I read the list again, then look at the clock. It's nearly 10, and it's a school night, but I promise some night this summer you can stay up past midnight.
What about everything else?
I point to her list. Is there something you've been wanting to share? She shrugs, a shy look in her eyes.
Maybe. Someday.
I arch a brow. Is this something I need to know?
No, it's just a letter. I'll show you soon, when it's right.
A letter, huh? I keep my voice neutral, even though part of me wants to see the letter this second, but I want her to do this on her terms. There's no rush on my part. You can share when you're ready.
I will. I promise. I've had one for a while that I want to show you.
She takes a beat.
But we can do the rest of my list.
I stare at her quizzically, making sure this list comes from her heart. that these are things that truly matter to her and not simply a whim. You really want to do all this? She nods vigorously.
I do.
Let me think about it. Lucy smacks her forehead.
Oh, wait, there's one more thing.
She grabs the notebook and adds an item, then shows me her addition. Master mini golf. That's something you think your mom wanted you to do? She smiles impishly.
No, that's just something I want to do.
Kids. They zig, then they zag. What's with the sudden interest in mini golf? She rolls her eyes.
Piper, silly.
Piper? I ask incredulously.
Yes. When I saw her in the office the other day, she said she would teach me. Did you know she used to play competitively?
I did not. I didn't even know that was a thing.
It's definitely a thing. Also, she's pretty cool. I like her. Plus, her office is filled with pretty things, and she keeps lots of lists, too.
Freaking Piper. The woman from college, the woman from the weddings, the woman down the hall in the same office building who despises me. The woman who weirdly looked hot wearing an Easter bonnet for a dress. How the hell is that possible? And does she have a list about mini golf?
She has a list of all the best places to play in the city.
It figures. Piper probably wants to teach anyone how to whack a ball hard enough to smack me in the head with it. And she'd probably look good doing it, too.
Chapter 5. Deep in the heart of Queens is a musty old school that gives away every secret in its walls. Everything in here echoes. Voices carry from room to room. Shoes sound on the next floor. You have to whisper at 10 decibels below the ambient noise level unless you want the gym class in the basement to hear. Paige slumps on the green vinyl couch in her office, where she serves as vice principal of this private high school. I double-check to make sure the door is locked. We're alone since it's evening, but you never know. That might be even more reason to close up tight. She heaves a sigh, grabs a tissue, and dabs at her eyes.
I don't know how long I can do this, she whispers.
I sit next to her and squeeze her shoulder. For 2.5 more months, that's how long. She lowers her head, her shoulders sagging.
Every day it's something.
Well, it's not really every day. I flash a cheery grin. It's been more like every month. So look on the bright side. You only have 10 more weeks of the biological mom trying to extract every single penny from you that she can. Paige groans. Another tear falls.
10 more long weeks.
I pat her thigh. Have you told Lisa about this new request? Paige shakes her head.
No, she's so stressed. She's been wanting this for so long, and I don't want to worry her. That's why I called you.
I wrap my arm around her shoulder. It's good that you called me. I'm like one of those fix-it chicks. Jodie Foster would play me in a movie. All badass and tough, taking no prisoners.
You're totally the fixer. But Jodie Foster would wear a suit. Don't wear a suit.
I flub my lips and make the sign of a cross like I'm warding off vampires. As if I'd ever wear a suit. Fixers like me, we wear trendy tops and cute skirts and sexy heels. Paige looks over at me and smiles. That's definitely you. She sighs again.
I'm sorry, Piper. I hate that I have to keep asking for your help.
Hey, I want to help. That's what I do. That's our deal. I take a beat. How much does she want this time?
She says she needs another $3,000 for maternity clothes, Paige says, tugging on her blonde ponytail.
I whistle in shock. Damn! Maternity clothes aren't cheap. Is she shopping for them in the Hamptons with the Kennedys? Paige laughs slightly. And it's for living expenses, too. I shake my head, frustrated for her, but what can you do? Paige and her wife Lisa are adopting a baby, and the biological mom has been draining them dry with her requests that border on emotional extortion. It stresses Lisa out, and it worries Paige. Understandably. It's not their first time on the baby rodeo, but they're hoping this time sticks. They tried to have a baby through in vitro first, but it didn't work. So they chose to go down the adoption path. The trouble is, they're out of money after the in vitro attempts. That's where I've come in. I've been paying for everything. I offered, I'm glad to do it. I want my sister to have her heart's desire. And she and Lisa want to be parents so badly that their want has its own weight. But they're stretched thin in their jobs, and adoption is insanely expensive. I dip my hand into my cavernous bag, grab my phone, and PayPal the money to her. She sighs, clasps her hand to her chest, then yanks me in for a hug. A wet hug, since she's crying again. On my shirt. It's silk, one of my favorites. Gently, I try to move her face away from the fabric as I stroke her hair. Thank you. I feel terrible asking. She takes a deep breath and collects herself. I shake a finger at her. Don't feel one bit bad. I offered to pay for it. That was the deal. Don't you remember? I do, she whispers. We sat down one afternoon more than a year ago, after their last failed attempt at in vitro, and I made the offer. We can take out a loan or put it on a credit card somehow, Paige had said. Stop. Credit cards don't work like that, and you know it. Plus, I'm doing fine. I've tucked plenty away. I'm like a squirrel with her nuts, only I remember where I left them. I have it, and I'm going to cover the costs. Every single penny. Are you sure? Paige had asked. Positive. It was the least I could do for the person I love most. I smooth her hair. I knew it was going to be like this, and you have enough to worry about. Don't fret about me. But you do need to tell Lisa, okay? She nods, squares her shoulders, and nods again as if telling herself she'll find the strength. I know. Now is not the time for secrets. Got it? She arches a brow, nudging me knowingly.
But some secrets are okay to keep.
Hey, I keep secrets about myself. Secrets no one needs to know. This is different. This is something you need to share with your wife. She nods.
You're right. I just don't want to stress her out more. And she gets stressed when she knows what you're paying for.
I brandish my claws. Tell her never to stress. She'll just owe me a life debt and her child. But hey, no big deal.
I'll let her know you're claiming your stake in the baby.
Hell yeah. I'm going to shower her in everything. Incidentally, your little girl is going to have the best wardrobe ever. I'm already buying her everything. It satisfies every desire I have to be an aunt.
You might want to be more than an aunt someday,
she says, her voice rising like she's leading the witness. I stare at her. First, no partner. Second, have you seen my daily to-do list? It's stuffed. Third, let me just focus on aunting for now and getting you your baby. That's my number one goal.
Thanks again, Piper. If I could ask anyone else, I would.
I arch a brow. Like mom? She laughs heartily.
That's a good one.
Why, thank you very much. I've been working on my comedy routine.
You know she'd want to, though.
I roll my eyes. She'd want to. She'd dip her hand into the ceramic pig cookie jar, grab some rolls of quarters, and say, here's what I saved for you.
Mom and her cookie jars. She means well, at least.
She does mean well, but she doesn't always do good. She doesn't always, how can I put this delicately, make the best choices. A laugh bursts from Paige at the callback to what one of our teachers said about our mom when she took us out of school for a week for her fourth wedding. We've since adopted it as our slogan.
So we make better ones.
I knock fists with her. Radcliffe sisters, making better choices, I say. Paige and I made a vow to each other in high school. Do better than mom. And we don't mean financially. On that note, I say goodbye and grab a lift back to Manhattan. Along the way, I catch up on emails, hoping to reschedule the stationery shop appointment for tomorrow since it's far too late now. Tomorrow morning works, the owner replies quickly. I sigh in relief, grateful for the easy switch. I need events to run smoothly and business to keep coming in. I have to be able to pay both my bills and any more unexpected costs for my sister. That's a promise I made her, and it's one I intend to keep. Fortunately, business is good, but I can't rest on my laurels. That means I must get back to work. I settle into the back seat, check my phone, and find a text from someone who seems to have adopted me lately. Lucy, I totally want to take you up on your offer. She's not a prospective bride, obviously. Spending time with her won't net me more business. But that's not why I reply with a time and a date. I don't even do it because I knew her mom. I do it because Lucy's a cool kid. Then I zoom in on work, work, work.
I touch base with my brides and prospective brides, set appointments, schedule meetings, and see if I can help them with anything at all. I need to be the best. No, I need to be even better. Chapter 6. The couch in my office is pink and plush. The space is half Martha Stewart, half Barbie Dream Home, and that makes it 100% delight. Brides love meeting me here, and I love meeting them here. It's a win-win. From my spot on the pink couch a few days later, I listen intently as Katya details her grand plans. I nod at the right moments, take notes at other times, and continue to work on my list of all the ways to make her wedding the most fabulous, activity-strewn event in all the land. Because that's what she wants. So, what do you think? Katya practically bounces on the cushion. With wide green eyes, she waits for my response. I tap my purple pen against my chin, forming my answer. There are some really terrific ways that we can weave in games, I tell her, then detail some of the more successful strategies I've used. Wedding Mad Libs are a blast. You leave them at each table and the guests give you marital advice. Often hilarious. Katya squeals. I love Mad Libs. Who doesn't? Just expect a lot of advice about birthing monkeys and guidance about where to put a candlestick, as well as wisdom about all things slippery. Katya gives a confused blink. Advice about slippery candlesticks? Is that supposed to mean? She trails off, blushing as pink as the sofa cushions. I think that's the idea. According to research, monkeys, candlestick, and slippery are some of the most popular words people use in Mad Libs. I tap my list and continue. You can also have board game centerpieces, bride and groom trivia, and a couple of crosswords for guests to play. Her magnetic smile returns, and she clearly loves those ideas. And what about games at the rehearsal dinner and bachelorette party? Galen and I want to do that too. She tucks her feet under her on the couch. If you'd like to initiate your guests into the games theme early, then go for it, I say. You're so good at this. How are you not married? I cringe internally. How does being skilled at planning a wedding equate to being wedded? But alas, this is an assumption I get regularly. If I'm helping a woman plan a wedding, I should be happily married. I flash her a practiced smile. Because I'm busy planning fabulous weddings. Don't you spend a second worrying about my dating life. Someday it'll be me walking down the aisle. She grins too. That was what she wanted to hear. That reaction wasn't new to me either. People in love want everyone to be in love. Now, tell me more about the games you want to play, I say, steering her back to why we're here. She nibbles on her lip, glances around as if she's about to reveal a secret, then stage whispers, I thought we could also play Never Have I Ever. I die a little bit inside, because I'm going to have to squash her dreams. You know, she says, mistaking my expression for unfamiliarity with the game. It's that drinking game where one person says, never have I ever, then says something embarrassing, and everyone who's done the embarrassing thing has to drink. I know the game, I say, stone-faced, raising a stop right there palm. There are certain hard limits in my business. That game is one of them. Every now and then, a bride wants to play that bad idea disguised as a pastime, and I must find a way to stop her. Katya is no different. Fortunately, I've developed a preventative with a 100% success rate. Here goes. I look Katya straight in the eye. I'm going to level with you. Practice some tough love. That was what I told you the first time we met, right? She nods like a good girl. You said you might have to give me tough love at some point, but it would be in my best interest if you did. I meant it, and the time has come. Are you ready? I'm ready. She perches on the edge of her seat and reaches for my hands. Oh, okay. This is how we're doing it. We're holding hands. So be it. I squeeze hers. Katya, repeat after me. She nods. I will repeat after you. You will not. I will not. Ever play. Ever play. That game at your rehearsal dinner, your wedding, your bachelorette party, or at any time within a one-week window around your nuptials. She sighs morosely. Really? It's the Never Have I Ever wedding pledge. You can play it on a girls' night out 1 month post-wedding. You can play a kids' version with nieces and nephews. But you can't play it with your friends or your spouse or the wedding party. I need you to finish. You have to take the pledge. She repeats my final lines, and when she's through, her shoulders sag, and she fiddles with the cuffs of her white blouse. But why? It's such a fun game. Don't you love that game? I choose a diplomatic answer. It's a fun game at times, especially with kids. But games have a time and a place. Halo, for instance, is great in a man cave. Trivial Pursuit belongs with your brainiac nerd friends who love to show off. Full disclosure, I do like Trivial Pursuit, and my friend Kristen in Florida kills at it. Monopoly is the granddaddy of family night bonding games. Even Would You Rather can be a fun game. But Never Have I Ever is what we in the trade call a recipe for disaster. But we played it all the time in my sorority. We had the best time. I can only imagine that sort of best time resulted in one hell of a hangover the next day. I'm sure it was fun, and I'm sure it's tempting to play, but it's not a wedding game. Katya keeps pressing. Why would it be so bad at a wedding? It's all my friends. I know all their business. And I'm going to have to set the table for her, soup by salad spoon. Here's why. Picture this. You're at a lovely rehearsal dinner. Maybe it's an after party with just your friends, so you let loose. You have a few tequila shots, and you decide to play Never Have I Ever with the guys and the girls in the wedding party. It starts to go like this. I draw a deep breath and imitate a participant in the game. Never have I ever blown the best man. Katya's eyes widen and she shakes her head. I've never blown Benji. Trust me, someone in the wedding party will have blown Benji, and you'll all find out who has had his dick in her mouth. Oh my. I adopt a manly voice. Never have I ever sent a dick pic to the maid of honor. She clasps a hand over her mouth and giggles. Oh my God, I bet Tristan did send one to Haley. Galen told me Tristan loves to send dick pics. My point exactly. And the last one. I pause dramatically to clear my throat, adopt my most intensely serious expression, and bring it home with my never-fail, never-have-I-ever killer. Never have I ever had sex up the butt. She cringes. And perhaps that's her hard limit. But Galen and I have talked about this. We're not interested in butt stuff. I pointed her. Exactly. And if you play that game, do you want to know that maybe he has done butt stuff? Or Tristan has? Or Haley? She covers her ears. Monkey hears no evil. Then she uncovers them. Haley says it's a no-fly zone. But what if it's not for Tristan? Or Benji? Or your bridesmaids? Do you really want to know that about all of your friends? Do you want to know who likes butt stuff and who doesn't? Do you really want to have the image in your head of who likes butt stuff when everyone's walking down the aisle? She sighs. Maybe I don't. I lean forward and pat her knee. Personally, there are just some things that belong between God, me, and the lamppost. She laughs and agrees, then checks her watch and gathers her purse. You're right, I've never done butt stuff, and I never want anyone to know. Butt stuff is between God, me, and the lamppost. I rise and walk her to the door. Butt stuff is definitely in that, and only that, three-way. Laughing, she tells me she'll see me in a few days at her fitting and heads down the hall. I return to my favorite place on the pink couch, sending off some emails about Katya's wedding to-do list. A few minutes later, there's a knock at my door. Yes, I say, without looking up. So your butt stuff is between you, the lamppost, and your maker? I grab a bridal magazine from my coffee table and do my best to fling it straight at Zach's head. He dodges my effort easily, and the magazine wings its way to the hall. He turns around and grabs it, then sets it on my glass coffee table. I mean, I'm just curious. I didn't realize this room operated as a confessional. I arch a brow. I didn't realize you saw fit to eavesdrop on all my conversations. I was walking down the hall. She was leaving. The door was open. Ergo. I nod. Ergo, the next time you're consulting with a client about how you're going to rip his or her spouse to shreds, I'll remind you that the door was open.
I don't have those conversations with the door open.
Or do you? I fire back. Maybe I've overheard some. He stands in the doorway, leaning against it, looking too good-looking once again. That's his true special talent, besides being completely odious. He's odious as he looks too cool for school. Today, it's courtesy of tailored slacks, a crisp blue shirt, and his tie, slightly undone. What is it about slightly undone ties that are too sexy to be fair? His tie sports a design of penguins, and that doesn't help matters. Cartoonish, adorable penguins. Not fair indeed. Especially when he smooths a hand over said tie, drawing my attention to his flat stomach. Is there a rule somewhere that says men this handsome must also be dreadful?
Well, you've clearly overheard some of my finest work. I'll assume you were impressed. Negotiation is my strong suit. Wait, everything is my strong suit.
I roll my eyes. One, I was not impressed. Two, I can negotiate my ass off too, thank you very much. Three, humility is certainly not your strong suit.
And may I remind you, never have I ever said it was.
A teasing glint flashes in his eyes. Hey, you were eavesdropping. He shrugs, but he's grinning.
I only eavesdrop on good things like butt stuff.
I glare at him, narrowing my eyes. Did you come here for a reason? He sighs, then drops his lawyer demeanor and turns on some sort of sweet voice I rarely hear him use.
I stopped by because Lucy's on her way. You sure you're cool with this? With the mini-golf stuff?
I smile. Of course. I adopt a nefarious tone. I've been looking for a mini-golf acolyte.
You've definitely got one. She's set on this.
He's quiet for a moment as he jams his hands in his pants pockets, looks away, then back at me.
Listen, thanks. I appreciate this.
And I soften. It's hard to hate a widower who's good with his kids. It's hard to hate a widower who's walked through hell and back. Even though I contend he's still odious, I suppose he's a little less than he could be. Lucy is always welcome. He grins crookedly.
Unlike me, right?
I smile. Exactly. Exactly unlike you. I wave him off. Move along, shark. Move along. But he doesn't leave right away. He stares at me as if he's studying me. Raising one eyebrow, he peers more intently, like something is out of place. What? I wipe a hand over my cheek, my mouth. Do I have something on my face? Is there a sesame seed stuck in my teeth? I didn't eat anything recently, so I've no clue what's off. He points at my face, then makes a rolling motion with his index finger.
Your hair.
Raising a hand, I pat my strands. Is there a bug? A piece of lint? He shakes his head.
You cut it.
Yes, the other day. But it was... Wait, what the hell just happened? He noticed my hair?
Just a trim?
He asks, finishing for me. A flush sweeps over my cheeks, heating me up with the strange realization that he pays enough attention to notice. But then, just as quickly, I tell my cheeks to chill out. He didn't even compliment my hair. He simply observed that it's 1 centimeter shorter. That's part of his job, to pay attention to details. It means nothing more. Just a trim, I repeat, returning to my crisp, you drive me crazy tone as I gesture to the door. The door is that way. He makes a show of checking out the doorway.
Yes, this is indeed the door. Thanks for the tip.
A few seconds later, as his footsteps sound in the hallway, he calls out,
the haircut looks nice.
That flush, that heat, it comes back for an encore. Even though I want to punch him for saying something not horrid. Not horrid at all. Lucy hops up onto the pink couch, sitting cross-legged. She glances around, like she does every time she's here. Your office is so pretty. You have so many pretty things. I'm going to make a list of all the pretty things from your office that I want to have in my office someday. Why limit it to your office? Why not just make a list of all the pretty things you want to have in your room right now? I say, as I grab my favorite purple golf balls and drop them in my purse. Her eyes brighten. You're right. I'll tell my dad. He'll be delighted, I'm sure. She whips out a notebook from her backpack and begins writing. She shows me the list. Pink couch, white curtains, a whiteboard. Whiteboards, I say, sighing happily as I snag my golf clubs. They're the best. Make sure to get many colors of dry erase markers. Ooh, I will, she says, then writes that down. Also, I'm super excited because I've never had a pink couch. Never have I ever had a pink couch, I offer. You need candy now. I do? I play that game with my friends and we eat candy when we've done it. I shake a finger at her. You'd better be playing a kid-friendly version. She rolls her eyes. Obviously. Also, I have gummy bears. We can use them. She dips her hand into her backpack and grabs a plastic bag of gummy bears as I usher her toward the door. Don't tell my dad because he doesn't like it when I eat candy, but I picked some up after school today. Why doesn't he like you having candy? Because he says it's going to send me to the dentist, but I brush my teeth all the time, so I'm fine. I have to tell you something, I whisper as I lock my office door. I love candy. Me too. Okay, let's play. You go first. As we walk to the waiting lift, I try to think of something to stump her. Never have I ever licked a frozen pole. Lucy laughs. Why would anyone lick a frozen pole? To see if your tongue sticks to it. I think your tongue would stick to it. I'm definitely not licking a frozen pole. I grab a piece of candy and pop it in my mouth. She points at me. That's not fair. You knew you licked a frozen pole and you just wanted a piece of candy. I wiggle my eyebrows as the car arrives. Exactly. We hop into the car and Lucy goes next. Never have I ever retaken a selfie 10 times to make sure I look better in it. Please, girl. 100 retakes is more like it. We both reach for gummies and pop them in our mouths. I hold up a finger, taking my turn, as the driver heads toward the closest mini golf course. Never have I ever had dessert for dinner. Again, we both reach into the bag. Lucy clears her throat, and a twinkle gleams in her blue eyes. They're an ice blue, like her father's, and they're quite stunning. I mean, on her. Her eyes are stunning on her. I've never tried to convince my brother that he was born on the moon. I huff. That's so not fair. I don't have a brother. She shimmies her shoulders, reaches for a gummy, and chews it proudly. Fine. I have an excellent one. I go for the pièce de résistance. Never have I ever pretended I won an Oscar. We both reach for the candy bag at the same time. I laugh and then say, what's your Oscar speech? Do it right now. She straightens, clasps her hands to her chest, and begins. Oh my God, I'm totally shocked. I didn't expect this at all, and I didn't even prepare a speech because I was so sure I was not going to win. This is such a surprise. But I'd like to thank the Academy. I'd like to thank my agent and my manager and the producers, and I want to thank Marvel for casting me as the most awesome superhero of all time. And I want to thank the producers of Girl Power for making such a great movie about how awesome girls are. I'd like to thank all of my best friends. I'd like to thank my daddy. And most of all, I'd like to thank my mommy. She stops, and her voice catches, then turns somber. She's my inspiration. And on that wobbly note, my heart hammers, and a wave of sadness crashes over me. You still miss her a lot. It's not a question. It's an acknowledgement of the truth. I do. Will I always? I squeeze her arm as the car slows at our destination. She was one badass lady, and you will probably always miss her in some way. I think so too, she says, and we head to the course. While there, I turn my focus solely to the sport, telling her how I played for fun with my friend Kristen when we were growing up in Florida. Then I turn more serious in high school. I show her the tricks of the trade, how to plant her feet, how to hold the club, and the most important tip of all, how to hit rather than whack the ball to the next county. Admittedly, smacking the hell out of a ball can be a blast and a great way to blow off steam, but it doesn't help your game. And on a mini golf course, whacking usually translates into striking something you shouldn't be striking, the next obstacle, or, say, a person. Lucy's no prodigy, but she's a quick study, and she improves as we move through the course. I'd like to think her mom would be proud, and I tell her as much. Thanks, Piper. Also, will you keep it a secret from my dad that I ate so many gummies? I hold up a hand to high five. Obviously, that's Vault. When we return, my phone buzzes as we head up the steps to the brownstone. It's Charlie. I pick up and say hello. What's cooking, good looking?
Group dinner tomorrow night. Are you in? I have some big news to share.
Better not be that you're entering the wedding planning business because you're the last person I'd want to compete with, I say, unlocking the front door.
You think I'd make a good wedding planner? I'm not sure if I should be honored or offended.
Silly man, it's a compliment. Obviously. I don't want to go head-to-head with you in the battle for business. You have the Midas touch. You'd somehow find a way to be the best in 2 days.
That's kind of you, but it would take 3 days.
I laugh. What's the news?
I'll unveil all my wedding business plans tomorrow night.
He gives me the time and location. I'll be there. I walk with Lucy down the hall to her dad's office, and when we go inside, he's on the phone. Henry in his lap, coloring on his desk.
You're sure it's just a group dinner?
Zach waits.
I know, but I have to ask.
He pauses.
All right, no drool, Bibbs. I'll see you tomorrow night.
He looks up at me, and our eyes meet. I raise a hand like I'm going to ask a question in class. Why would there even be drool, Bibbs? A lopsided grin is his answer. A grin that's far too crookedly sexy for my good.
Long story.
Parking my hands on my hips, I stare, letting him know I'm waiting. You don't need a bib anymore, Daddy. I don't need one. Bibs are for babies, Henry says, without even looking up from his drawing. Zach shrugs amiably.
And that's the long and short of it.
I'm getting nowhere on the drool bibs, so I return to the matter at hand. I take it you're going to Charlie's group dinner? I wouldn't be surprised. We run in the same circles, but I want to make sure. Zach nods.
Charlie said he has news to share.
I have an idea. You guys should go together, Lucy suggests, pointing from her dad to me and back in case there is any confusion who she means.
You definitely should,
Henry seconds. A cough bursts from my throat.
I have an appointment beforehand,
even though I don't. But I don't want Zach to be the one to say how ridiculous Lucy's idea is. I don't want to hear him reject me when I haven't even asked him out. Not that I would. But I especially don't want to be laughed off while he's sitting there being all effortlessly handsome as his son draws on his desk. I swivel around. See you there. Zach nods.
See you there.
Then he calls out.
And thank you.
Thank you, Piper, Lucy adds. I leave, wondering what to wear.
Chapter 7. My mother gasps.
You look so handsome.
My sister nods so vigorously she's making nodding a sport.
Sharp. You're totally sharp.
Lucy bounces on her toes.
You're adorable.
Seriously, why is everyone here in the kitchen? Are they gathering a coven of Nolan ladies? I only asked my mom to come over to watch the kids tonight. And naturally, she dragged my big sister, Emmy, along. My daughter was 2 floors down at her friend Melanie's house, but she mysteriously popped back up a few minutes ago after I finished getting dressed for Charlie's big dinner. And now Lucy stares at me with wide eyes as she perches on the edge of a kitchen stool alongside the 2 other women, who all gawk at me, like I'm a zoo animal. Watch Zach getting ready for dinner. Be amazed at how he can dress himself. Prepare to be dazzled at the way he hails a cab. Why, yes, the modern male can indeed accomplish basic tasks on his own. Only Henry is uninterested in my attire. Dark jeans, blue and white striped button-down, and wingtips. My son plucks blueberries from a bowl, arranges them in a circle, then pops them in his mouth as he flips through pages in an early reader book on baseball. Like father, like son, he knows our nation's pastime is the best sport ever. Full stop. Thanks, I say to the ladies as I head to the cupboard, grab a glass, and pour some water from the tap. I turn around, take a drink, and am greeted by three still smiling faces. Yup, Coven. I down the water, set the glass on the counter, and cross my arms. I can go toe-to-toe in any staring contest, like a cat. So I do. They stare back at me, wide grins still intact. Satisfied grins. What the hell? Fine, I crack. Okay, what's with the giggly faces?
I'm just excited that you're going out,
my sister declares, yanking her brown hair from its hair tie, then refastening it in a bun on top of her head. You do know I've gone out before, I point out.
I know, but it's still exciting,
my mother chimes in as she pushes the coffee pot against the counter backsplash, then adjusts the toaster's position just so. My mother can't resist straightening things. Anything. Everything. I arch a brow. Really? Why is it so exciting?
Because you're doing stuff with your group of friends again,
Emmy adds. I've done stuff with them before, haven't I? I scratch my jaw, trying to remember. Admittedly, I haven't been the most social cat in the last couple of years, but who can blame me? Still, I must have gone to a bowling night or a beer tasting event or a brunch. Wait, I hate Sunday brunch. Who has time to wait for a table in Manhattan or Brooklyn just to order avocado toast and poached eggs to take pictures for Instagram? Emmy shakes her head.
I don't think you have, though.
Do you track my social life?
Well, seeing as you usually ask Mom, Miranda, or me to take care of the kids if you have plans, and you've only asked us to watch them when you have work, it's not that hard to track,
Emmy says, like it's normal to remember these details rather than, say, incredibly nosy and overly interested.
She's right, dear. You haven't done much besides work and take care of the kids,
my mother says. That's sort of how it goes when you're a single parent. A deadpan.
It's just nice to see you socializing, Emmy says.
Wait, I've got it. I did do something. I went to David's fundraiser last year. I donated $1,000, too. There, I have socialized. My sister scoffs.
You lasted all of 45 minutes. You came home early when we'd just started watching Mythbusters.
Henry's gaze snaps up.
You can lift a car with duct tape, but you can't stop it with duct tape.
I hold up a hand to high five. You know it. Then I gesture to my sister. See, we finished the episode and learned something valuable. Plus, those 45 minutes felt like hours. My mother shoots me a motherly look.
Dear.
That's all. Just dear. It says so many things, mostly that she vastly disagrees with everything I'm doing in my life. Emmy shoots me a look. The I'm older and no better one.
You're proving our point. You don't socialize much. And when you do, you only do stuff with the guys. Basketball and that sort of thing. You really only have playdates with Charlie and David,
Lucy adds, the little rat.
But not girls.
I hold up a hand, jumping in immediately to make the most vital correction. One, they are definitely not playdates. Two, so what? Charlie and David are cool.
Yes, they're lovely gentlemen. We're simply happy you're going out with boys and girls tonight,
my mother adds. I grin, fully onto them. All of them. Maybe especially my daughter, but I can't toy with her. Lucy, sweetie pie, can you and Henry find a tie for me? You're so good at picking out ties. I'm not planning on wearing a tie tonight, but it'll keep them busy for a few. She hops off the stool, grabs Henry's hand, and hustles him to my room. When she's out of earshot, I decide to have fun with my mom and sister. You're so right. And you know what? I'm so glad you're both here. I clasp a hand to my chest and affect a little squeal. Because I wanted to let you know I'm finally ready to date again. I flash the biggest smile. So I thought, what better place to start than with the big group of people I've been connected to since college? My sister's breath catches.
Yay!
My mom beams.
Oh, sweetie, we've been hoping you'd be ready to get back out there.
She throws her arms around me.
I'm so happy for you, honey.
Wait, they believed that load of crap? My mom's embrace tightens, ratcheting to full vice grip level. Yep, the rumors are true. I am an asshole. Also, clearly I have no heart. But I do have a brain, and it's yelling loudly at me to fix this mess I've made. I disentangle from her. Mom, I was joking. I'm sorry. She tilts her head like the dog at the Victrola.
You're joking?
Her tone is the definition of despondent. I'm just not interested in dating.
But it's been 2 years,
she says gently, running a hand down my arm like I need comfort. But I'm not. I'm fine. I'm well aware of the time frame.
Are you still?
She lets her voice trail off as she pats her cheeks. I blink. Am I what? Crying myself to sleep at night? My sister whimpers.
Oh, were you crying yourself to sleep?
I heave a sigh. Emmy, Mom, I love you both, but I'm not crying myself to sleep. I'm not crying in the shower. I'm fine. When you check in with your grief books, feel free to take some solace in the fact that I'm in the acceptance stage. But that doesn't mean I'm going to dinner with friends to scam on women. My mother furrows her brow in a question.
Is that what they call it these days? Scamming? I think they just call it pick up women,
my sister says helpfully. Then she lowers her voice to a whisper.
Also, people mostly just swipe right and left. Do you want me to help you get on Tinder?
You could try a matchmaker too. I've heard of a very successful one who helps men in your situation,
my mom puts in. My sister thrusts her phone at me, showing me Tinder.
I downloaded it just for you. Let me help.
Groaning, I shove my hands roughly through my hair. I don't want your help with Tinder, or Plenty of Fish, or a matchmaker, especially one who helps men in my situation. I stop to sketch air quotes. Nor do I want to go out with Charlie's sister's friend or Hannah's mom. I'm not interested in any of those because I have my hands full with the law, practice, and the kids. Dating is the last thing on my mind, and if it were higher up, I assure you, I would not be scamming or picking up or swiping left, right, up, or down on someone in my group of friends from college, especially since tonight is about Charlie.
But are you sure? So many singles are having loads of success.
My sister's voice rises with the last vestiges of hope. She's relentless, but that's the highest compliment from one attorney to another. Exasperated, I slump against the counter. Seriously, what is it about being a widower that makes everyone, literally everyone, want to set me up? Emmy's lips twitch in a grin.
Well, that's exactly what makes everyone want to set you up, being a widower.
I shake my head in disbelief. Let me get this straight. That's why I'm the hot commodity in the meat market, because I have a dead wife? Emmy takes a step back. My mom grabs the edge of the counter. Was my bluntness too much? But what's the point in tiptoeing around the obvious? Let's just call a spade a spade. You want to set me up because my wife is underground. Does that make any sense?
Zach,
my mother chides.
Don't talk that way.
Why? The answer comes in Henry's low sniffle. He's back, a purple tie in one hand. His whimper turns into a louder one. Then it's muffled as Lucy tugs him in for a hug.
It's okay, little bub.
I don't want mommy to be underground,
Henry says between tears. My heart slams to the floor. I squeeze my eyes shut for a second as if I can will this away. I've made my son cry. I'm a terrible shark. I'm a snake. I cut across the kitchen, kneel, and wrap my arms around both of them. Guys, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. Henry sniffles more, louder and wetter. Forgive me, I whisper, my throat tightening. Please forgive me.
It's okay, Daddy,
he says, swallowing his sadness, it seems. But soon my shirt is covered in tears. And I don't have to worry if I have a black heart. I know I do. The great thing about being 7 is you're like a rubber band. Henry bounces back a few minutes later. He wipes away his tears, helps me pick out a new shirt. and insists on me going, even when I tell him I can skip the dinner and watch that Mythbusters episode on how to make an airplane from duct tape.
It's okay. I'm all better. Aunt Emmy and Grammy said they're taking Lucy and me out for ice cream.
Ice cream. God bless. It's the universal salve. It makes nearly everything better. Before I know it, the four of them are pushing me out the door and telling me to have fun, even though fun is the last thing on my mind. Emmy follows me down the hall to the elevator, setting her hand over the panel.
Listen, don't think twice about it,
she says, exonerating me before I even have to ask for absolution. I scrub a hand over my jaw. Sorry. She clasps a hand to her chest.
No, I'm sorry. I pushed you. We piled on you, Mom and me. You need to take things at your own pace. I was honestly just so stupidly excited that you were going out. I let it get the better of my judgment, and then I pushed you. And I'm not surprised it upset you.
I try to wave it away. It's fine. I get it. I mean, let's be honest. I was a total catch before Anna. I'm still a total catch. It's not a surprise that men, women, and matchmakers of all ages want to try to snag a piece of me. I smack my ass for effect. She gags.
I think my lunch just came up. Wait. No, that's breakfast. I'm so grossed out, my oatmeal is threatening to make a return visit.
I laugh, and she laughs harder, and all is forgiven. She tugs me in for a quick hug, then straightens my purple tie. Henry wanted me to wear it. Given that I made him cry, it's the least I could do.
Anyway, it just makes me happy that you're doing better. And that means going out, whether you're going out romantically or with friends.
I smile. I'm definitely better. And tonight, I'm definitely going out with friends. After I head downstairs and hail a cab, it hits me that I'm going to be 30 minutes early for dinner. I guess that gives me time to scam at the bar. Right, as if I want to do that. I'll just grab a drink and catch up on work on my phone. I'll answer emails, read files, and check in on cases. When I arrive at the restaurant, I tell the hostess I'm here for Charlie McGrath's dinner. She flashes a red-glossed smile and tells me there are others from the party waiting at the bar. When I turn my gaze, I catch a glimpse of wavy brown hair and legs that go on for days. I catalog the rest. A leather skirt that hits mid-thigh, dark gray suede heels, and toned arms on display in a short-sleeve black blouse. The brunette is chatting with a blonde. When Piper laughs, her lips curve up and her eyes twinkle. She hasn't even noticed me. I stand and stare as a realization lights up for me like a neon billboard flashing above a bar on a dark country road. You drive for miles and miles on winding hairpin turns till you see it. And when you do, it's bright and beckoning. Piper Radcliffe is the first woman I've been attracted to since Anna. And I'm pretty sure the attraction didn't begin tonight. I've been noticing her for days. For weeks. For months. Chapter 8. Charlie has chosen a bistro off Park Avenue in the East 60s. It looks like a farmhouse in the French countryside with long wooden tables, white linens, and wine. Everywhere wine. The bar is lit in the kind of light that suggests gas lamps are flickering, casting the space in a twilight glow. The kind that shows no imperfections. That makes everything look soft, inviting. Hell, maybe that's why my world just went ass up. Perhaps the light is tricking me into thinking something, feeling something, when I've felt so little for so long. That's what I tell myself, that this sensation in my chest is temporary insanity, but when Piper turns around, catches my gaze, and shoots me a curious look, I know it's not the light. Something else entirely is taking shape, something that feels foreign, because it's been ages since I felt a spark. I feel a ton of them right now. That's exactly what this is. Exactly what's been brewing for the last several weeks, and precisely why it'd be a mistake to do a damn thing about it. Especially since she clearly still hates me, judging from her, if you have to, you can join me, wave. I head straight for her, doing my best to shove this bizarre attraction to the far corner of my head. Wait, make that farther. Make that all the way out of my mind. Yes, it's gone.
You're early,
she remarks with a deliberate huff.
I guess you can hang out with us for a minute.
Thanks. I appreciate the heartfelt invite. I turn to her friend and extend a hand. Zach Nolan. The blonde shakes my hand.
Sloane Elizabeth.
She stops herself, laughing.
Sloane Goodman.
I arch a brow. Recently married and adjusting to the new last name?
Exactly. It's been 3 months, so you'd think I'd be accustomed to it now.
3 months. That's great. Congratulations. Piper holds up a hand and slams it to my shoulder. That's unexpected, too. The contact. Has she touched me before? I don't think she has, at least not like this, and not for longer than a second. She's already passed the 5-second mark, and she's still touching me. She's not letting go. She curls her hand over my shoulder and squeezes.
Do not do it.
Her warning is stern, and her brown eyes are full of fire. The hellfire she'll rain down on me if I do it. Sloane chuckles, casting a curious glance at her friend.
Do what?
Piper tips her forehead in my direction, still clasping my shoulder.
Zach, who incidentally is Zach Nolan Esquire,
she drags out Esquire so it drips with the mockery that it deserves,
doubles as an oracle of doom when it comes to marriages.
Sloane's smile turns upside down.
Keep your predictions far away from me.
I raise my hands in surrender, but not so high that Piper takes her hand off me. Nope, her hand is definitely still on my deltoid. I promise I reserve this party trick to amuse Piper since, well, it drives her crazy. Sloane chuckles, then lifts a brow in a knowing kind of way.
And do you pull her pigtails too and dip them in ink?
Of course, I answer. Sloane turns to Piper.
And do you leave frogs in his lunchbox?
Piper shoots her friend an are you crazy look.
What does that mean?
Sloane stares right back.
Figure it out. Fine, I will.
Piper crosses her arms, taking her hand off my shoulder. Well, that's sad. My shoulder enjoyed that moment a hell of a lot. The women are silent, studying each other's faces. I watch them intently as they seem to communicate a million things in one long stare. It's impressive, really, the way their eyes lock, their brows rise and fall, their lips quirk. They're having an entire conversation in facial expressions and laser eye holds. Women truly are more highly evolved. Piper holds up a finger.
Got it, but I disagree.
What does she disagree with? Sloane shrugs happily.
Disagree all you want, but I know the truth.
Tell me, I want to know.
There's nothing to know,
Piper adds. Holy shit, I'm witnessing a mind meld, a conversation conducted half out loud and half via brainwaves. I jump in. What did you guys just say?
Girl talk,
Piper mutters. Sloane checks the time on her phone.
I should head out of here. Malone is performing in 30. That's Mr. Goodman to you,
she says to me. Malone, you and your husband have rhyming names? She lifts her chin.
We do, and I love him madly, wildly, incandescently, insanely, intensely, immensely.
So there, Piper chimes in, then sticks her tongue out at me. Sloane laughs, shaking a finger at Piper.
Like I said, I know the truth.
Piper waves her off.
You may leave now.
Wait, I point my thumb at Sloane, then meet Piper's gaze. Did I ever tell you that rhyming names trumps everything? Any couple with rhyming names definitely will love each other forever and ever. Sloane clasps a hand to her heart.
Aw, see? He's not as bad as you say, Piper.
I chuckle. My reputation precedes me. Piper waves a hand dismissively in my direction.
Your reputation wafts off you.
I pretend to sniff my shoulder. It's a most excellent cologne. Sloane laughs, then leans in to give Piper a kiss on the cheek.
Have fun tonight, and don't be such a good girl.
That piques my interest. Is Piper a good girl? In bed? I'll just stuff that thought under the rug in my brain, too. Piper shoos away Sloan.
Say hi to that handsome man. Tell him to sing, well, anything, since everything he sings makes you swoon.
That is true.
Once she leaves, Piper gestures to her friend.
Her husband is a vet who moonlights as a lounge singer, like she stood a chance. Plus, she runs an animal rescue, so it's pretty much fate that brought them together.
I give her a steely stare. Wait, don't tell me you believe in fate. She raises a palm and slams it to my chest. Hello, hand. Nice to see you again.
Do not, she warns.
Do not what?
Do not ruin my buzz.
Ah, that explains her touchy side tonight. Just to be sure, though, I ask. Are you drunk? She scoffs, gesturing to her half-filled champagne glass and letting go of my chest. Damn, maybe I can get her to the third time's a charm stage.
Please, she says. I've had half a drink. I'm buzzed on life, happiness, and the possibility of tonight. After all, it's the big news night, and big news is usually good news. Also, why are you here early?
I toss the question back as I take the stool next to her. Why are you here early? She arches a brow.
Did I invite you to sit down?
I lean a little closer. No, but I did it anyway. She keeps her eyes locked to mine.
I'll try again. Why are you here 20 minutes early?
I decide to cut through the bullshit. I'm here early because all the women in my family kicked me out of my house.
Why did they kick you out? Were you mean to them? Did you insult your sister's hair, dress, clothes, or lifestyle choices? Did you tell your mom her new recipe for lasagna tastes like sand? Did you inform Lucy there's no such thing as Santa?
Whoa, you do think I'm terrible. But I'll have you know, Lucy is well aware of the lie of old Saint Nick and has been for 2 years.
And the other possibilities?
I scratch my chin. Why do I get the feeling you're trying to tell me I have nothing nice to say, ever? And yet I seem to recall recently telling you your haircut looked nice. And since she's been on a touching spree, I decide it's my turn. I lift a hand and touch the ends of her hair. She freezes, then swallows, glancing down at her heels. Soft, too, I add. Her breath seems to catch. I let go. Because I don't know where this moment goes next, or where I want it to go, or even what the hell I'm doing. Am I flirting with her? Should I be doing that? And do I even know how to anymore?